Have you done your taxes yet? Do you do them yourself or do you take them someplace? What questions do you have? Are you aware of changes in tax law that might affect how you do your return this year? We'll talk about all that on today's special edition, an income tax edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is off this week, so we'll do things just a little bit differently. Joy Cardine off as well. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. My guest is Shanna Bickel, a certified public accountant in Sarasota, Florida, who specializes in tax return preparation, tax planning, retirement planning, accounting, and personal finance. And Shanna, I understand that you're originally from Marquette, Michigan, so welcome back, if only virtually, to this latitude.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I am, and spent a good part of a lot of vacations in Wisconsin and going to Green Bay Packer games and the like. So
go Pack, go.
Yep.
Okay, so taxes, perhaps a less pleasant subject than Green Bay Packer football, at least most of the time. What changes have been made in tax law that people should really be aware of this year, or aren't there very many of them?
Well, there's a few big ones. For the higher income filers, there's the additional Medicare tax that went into effect. So that's an additional 0.9% on wages. If you are single, over $200,000, and if you're married, filing jointly, over $250,000. In addition to that, there's the net investment income tax, which is a 3.8% tax on the smaller of either your net investment income or your excess of modified adjusted gross income over those same income levels, the $250,000 for the married filing joint and the $200,000 for a single tax filer. So those are two of the, you know, that was the Medicare tax that was sort of talked about quite a bit. And again, that's for the higher income filers.
Mm-hmm. 800, I forgot to do something right at the top of the show. I apologize. I want to give the phone number so people can call in with their questions. And we're not going to do your tax return on the air today, folks. So if you've got really, you know, form-specific questions about, you know, we can't get too far into the weeds here. This is more of a general tax advice kind of thing. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org, onyourmoney@wpr.org. Shanna, what about the Affordable Care Act? How is that going to affect people's tax preparations this year?
That really doesn't affect 2013. As far as getting health insurance, the deadline for that is March 31st, so you want to be able or make sure that you have something in place by that time because it will be on your 2014 tax return. That's where they'll tack you, you know, the extra penalties if you don't have health insurance and you aren't applicable for one of the exemptions to the tax penalty.
800-642-1234. It's a special tax edition of On Your Money on the Ideas Network today. What about changes, major life changes like marriage, divorce, birth, adoption? How do these things affect our taxes?
Well, that can change your filing status. So if you were used to being married and now you're divorced, obviously you're not going to be filing with the same filing status. That changes, you know, your standard deduction as well as the amount of exemptions that are applicable on your tax return. So you definitely want to take those into account because for many single filers, that have been married, you know, their tax burden seems to go up a little bit when they don't have the extra deductions in place. And also, if you have children involved, and you know, maybe one of you is allowed to claim one child and the other is allowed to claim the other child, then obviously you will only have one dependent to claim on your tax return instead of the two that you were used to when you were married.
I'll tell you what, it can be a real wake-up call if you sell a home and suddenly don't have the mortgage interest and property taxes and all of that to deduct. Wow, what a shock that can be to the system.
Right. Not only that, but people who were itemizing and had a host of medical expenses. This year, another change that went into effect is it used to be that you had to reach the floor of 7.5% of your AGI before you could deduct any medical expenses. So now this year, that has gone up to actually 10%. So you're not able to deduct even as many of your medical expenses as you were in the past.
Let's take some calls. Chrissy in Madison is with us. Chrissy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I short sold a home in another state in 2013, and I'm being 1099 for the loss from the mortgage company. Do I have to claim that as income in the state of Wisconsin?
So what state were you in, Christy?
Nevada.
And what part of the year were you living in Nevada from?
Well, it was our primary residence when we sold it, and we moved to Wisconsin.
Right. So when you fill out your Wisconsin tax return, you're going to fill out a Nevada tax return also, and that income or that cancellation of debt income, it should all be, if it was your personal go ahead.
It was our personal residence, but we had to move here waiting for the short sale to go through. So we weren't in Nevada. We closed it in the first quarter of last year, but we were in Wisconsin at the time.
Wow, that's a really intricate question. It shouldn't have a bearing on your Wisconsin income, but that would be something I would want to have you consult a tax professional that's right in Wisconsin about, just to be clear.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chrissy, thanks for the call. Let's take another call. This time it'll be Janet in Menasha. Janet, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I'm wondering about a traditional IRA versus putting money into my 403B to reduce my tax burden for the federal, because this is the very first time we've had to pay in, and we don't want to have to if we can help it, or at least you want to reduce the amount we have to pay in. So is it possible I could call up my representatives for my work-related 401k or 403B and put my, $2,500 or whatever there versus having to open a separate traditional IRA?
I'm a little bit confused on your question. The $2,500, that is where?
Well, I think you can go up to $2,800 or something like that, just to basically invest money in a long-term retirement account so that you can reduce the amount of taxes you have to pay in. So it's kind of like, that's my understanding anyway. It's like they want to encourage you to save for retirement, so they'll give you a tax break if you take the money and you put it into an IRA after taxes, after you pay taxes on it already. But my husband says it's got to be a traditional IRA, and I was hoping I could just put it into my work-related 403B or 401K so that, I've got all my money in one place, more or less. But he thinks it's just a traditional IRA that is filling the requirements for the IRS.
Yeah, typically when an employer has an employer-sponsored plan, that has to be with them, and whatever their plan is, money that's deducted from your check goes straight into their plan. Unless they've set up like a simple IRA or something like that for you. But as far as establishing, a regular IRA to get the deduction on your tax return, that's completely separate. And just because you have a retirement plan associated with your work doesn't necessarily preclude you from being able to open up a traditional IRA and also getting the benefit of the tax deduction.
But I guess the question is, does she have to do that to get the benefit of the tax deduction? Could she add those funds, if she has the opportunity to add those funds to the plan she has through work, would she be able to achieve the same tax deduction by doing that, or would it be necessary for her to open up a traditional IRA in order to achieve the tax deduction?
The traditional IRA in order to achieve the tax deduction.
So, Janet, in this case, it sounds like your husband is right. I know that's probably tough, but there it is.
Well, you paraphrased it perfectly. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for the call, Janet. I appreciate it. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more questions for Shanna Bickel, Certified Public Accountant, who is here on a special tax edition of On Your Money to answer questions about filing taxes. Lots of questions to come. We'll talk about tax credits that are available to parents, some other things coming up in the program, ways that we can reduce our tax liability that we often miss. And then I've got a list. I don't know if we'll get to all of these or not, but I want to get to some of them, of some odd, unusual tax deductions that people have taken successfully, I might add, over the years. And Shanna, one of the things I'd like to hear from you, I'll give you a chance to think about this for a while. We won't spring this on you right away, but think about what the most unusual tax deduction you've ever had from one of your clients is. We'll have a little bit of fun with this. 800-642-1234. On Your Money at WPR.org is the email address. You can also post your questions or comments to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a special tax edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is off this week. So's Joy Cardine. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. And joining me as our tax expert today is Shanna Bickel, Certified Public Accountant in Sarasota, Florida, specializing in tax return preparation, tax planning, retirement planning, accounting, and personal finance. Let's go back to the phones. We'll take a call from Kathy in La Crosse. Kathy, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Here's my question. We paid tuition for a college student in 2012 and used it to claim one of the education credits on 2013 taxes. In 2013, the student got a retroactive scholarship, and part of that tuition that was paid in 2012 was refunded. So I'm wondering how we're supposed to account for that on our 2013 taxes.
When you say 2013 taxes, do you mean the taxes you just filed this year or the taxes?
The ones that I haven't filed yet, but I'm planning to soon, yes.
Okay, so did you get the revised statement, the 1098-T, showing that change from the educational institution?
From 2012, no.
Okay, so the information that was given on the 2012 should have gone on the 2012 tax return?
I think we've got some confusion here. Let me see if I can resolve it.
Okay, we paid the tuition in 2012 and used that to claim an education credit on our 2013 taxes, last year's taxes.
Okay, last year's taxes would have been your 2012 taxes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
However, in 2013, we received part of a credit that was paid in 2012 that I had already taken, you know, the education credit on.
Okay,
so I'm wondering if I should count it as income or if I should redo my 2013 taxes.
Okay, hang on. I think the problem here is we've got some terms that were not clear on. You filed your 2012 taxes in 2013. It was the 2012 taxes where you claimed the tuition deduction, and in calendar 2013 you got a partial refund. So you're wondering how to handle that on your 2013 taxes. I think that is...
Which I will file in 2014, correct.
Right, but it's the 2013 taxes that you're filing. We're always a year behind. So,
yep.
Shanna, given that, what should Kathy do?
Well, as far as the credit that was claimed in 2012, you may want to look at amending that return.
Okay.
Okay, and just so that it's clear and it's accurate based on the information that you were now, you know, refunded in 2013, because you don't want to overclaim a credit that legitimately you didn't receive.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Kathy, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mark in La Crosse next. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Yep, go ahead.
Hi there. I have a question about if a couple is not married, but they purchased the house together and they're both on the deed for the house, so, and on the statement from the bank, so they have mortgage interest and real estate taxes, who gets to claim what or what's legitimate? Can one person claim all of the deductions for mortgage interest and property taxes, or does it need to be a 50-50 split? And then an additional question I have is claiming head of household. If they both have children from previous marriages, can they both file head of household using their children as their dependents?
Okay, let's take the first question first. How do they split that deduction for the mortgage interest and property taxes?
Certainly. For the mortgage interest, whose taxpayer ID is on the form from your mortgage company?
I'm not sure. But okay. Both names are, it's mailed to both people. Both names are on the statement.
But generally they will have the primary or the first person on the statement. They will utilize their Social Security number.
And does that have a bearing then on who can deduct what?
Yes, that should go on the taxpayer that matches the Social Security number.
Okay. What if they are actually both paying 50% of the mortgage payment? Can they then still split it, or is that not allowed because we need to follow the taxpayer identification number on the statement?
I would at this point, unless your mortgage company is willing to reissue you new 1098 statements, I would, for simplification purposes, report it under the Social Security number that it's stated, because that's what the IRS is going to be matching it up against.
Gotcha. Okay.
As far as the property taxes, though, if you are both homeowners of that property, you can split that up however you'd like, you know, to use the deduction. So if it only benefits one person to itemize, then that person should take it.
Okay. Okay.
And would you repeat your second question again, please, Mark?
If both of the parties, the man and the woman, both have children from previous marriages, and now they're living together, can they both claim head of household using their dependents, you know, their own children as their dependents, their children from a previous marriage?
If you are paying for over 50% of the support of that child, you may claim head of household.
Okay,
so, yes.
And so the support test, I mean, obviously, or assuming they're both paying 50% of the cost for the home, but then there's other costs, you know, I mean, so you would essentially have two people in the same house potentially claiming head of household, and is that acceptable, or is that a red flag for the IRS then?
No, it's not a red flag, because the house, the residence, isn't necessarily what makes up 50%, because there's so much more than just goes into the cost of maintaining a home, right? You've got
correct,
food,
especially medical.
Exactly. So as long as you are providing for over 50% of the support of the child that you are, you know, claiming as a dependent to receive the head of household filing status, that's what they look at.
Okay. Very good. That answers my questions perfectly.
Mark, great. Thanks so much for calling us today. Appreciate it. Good questions. So I was reading, there's always articles about tax time about odd deductions that people take. A business owner successfully deducted the cost of feeding feral cats because they kept the rodent population under control in his store. That may not even be the oddest one I read. I think a gas station owner was allowed a deduction for giving his customers free beer. That would work great in Wisconsin. So, Shanna, what's the most unusual tax deduction that you've run into as a tax preparer?
You know, I'm not privy to have those kind of interesting tax deductions, but the most interesting one that's come to me was actually a very, you know, sort of sad case where a woman had multiple sclerosis, and in order for her medical condition, you know, to be controlled in the best manner, they really had to utilize maximal air conditioning and make sure that their home was of the temperature that would keep her symptoms as calm down as possible, and also to actually install a swimming pool. And so they were actually able to write off those expenses as medical deductions because it was for treating, you know, her medical condition.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is unusual and sad at the same time. Let's go back to the phones, 800-642-1234. If you have some general tax questions, some advice about deductions and things like that, how to amend a return, things like that, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Put something in the On Your Money mailbox. And Kevin McKinley's not here this week, but he'll be back next week, I think. I won't. We'll try and answer your questions on this special tax day or tax edition of On Your Money here on the Ideas Network. Let's go to Debbie in Oconto Falls next. Debbie, hi.
Hi. My question has to do with mortgage interest. The house that I live in, I make the mortgage payment at the bank, but the mortgage itself is held by a private owner, my parents, actually. So what we're wondering is, at this point, no one's taking advantage of the mortgage interest that I'm paying. Is it possible for me to do that on my taxes?
That's another one that relates to the taxpayer name and ID that is actually on the 1098 that the mortgage company issues the taxpayer. So it wouldn't be as, it wouldn't be as simple to say, well, I'm actually paying this, so I'm going to take the deduction, because what the IRS is going to be looking for is they also receive a copy of that 1098, and it's going to your mom and dad, to their Social Security numbers. So they would expect to see it on their tax return and not your tax return. So it
but
could,
on the bottom of the
Go ahead.
On the bottom of the 1098 that they get from the bank, it specifically says that they cannot claim in the interest on this loan if they are not making the payment.
I've never seen that before.
Me neither.
Because the way the IRS looks at it is it's based on whoever's Social Security number is on the 1098 is the only one who can legitimately take the deduction. Shanna, isn't that what you're saying?
Right. In most cases, yes.
Okay, so then they really could be taking advantage of this. We don't have an issue between who does it. It's just a deduction that neither one of us are taking advantage of right now, and we wanted to make sure who had the rightful you know, who was able to deduct this lawfully. So, okay, that's fine. Then I will let them know. Even though it says that at the bottom of the 1098, they still have the right to go ahead and put that on their taxes as a deduction.
Well, you know, you can look at it this way. You're paying it for them. You're gifting it to them, and they're receiving the benefit of the deduction. You know, you're gifting them a certain amount of money. They're choosing to use it towards their mortgage interest, and that's a viable deduction for tax purposes.
Okay,
Debbie,
thanks. Sounds good. All right. Well,
thanks so much for the call, Debbie. Appreciate it. Let's go next to Shirley in Amory. Shirley, thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm here. My question is probably similar. We helped our son get a home, and so we took out a new mortgage that actually covers two homes, and we're kind of like his bank, so the bank amortizes the whole schedule for 30 years, and the interest he pays is to us. So I'm wondering, too, how we're going to do this on taxes. Now, his name is on the quitclaim deed, and he's paying all the property taxes and making payments to us that includes the interest. So how are we going to do this?
Yeah, again, that's one of those things where you really need to report on your tax return. You know, if you are receiving the 1098 from the mortgage company, then that should be matched up on your tax return. And he can choose to, you know, he can claim the property taxes on his tax return.
Okay, but not the interest that he paid us then?
Because the 1098 is not in his Social Security number, it's not going to match what the IRS has.
And there isn't any way for Shirley to issue a 1098 of her own to her son if her son is paying interest to her. Would she then have to claim that as income?
Yes.
So, Shirley, it sounds like if you want your son to be able to deduct the interest that he's paying you from his taxes, you would have to declare the money that he's giving you as income.
Right. I don't have a problem with that. I just want to make sure that that's okay and what forms I need to do for that.
That one I would actually have you seek out a little bit of help with.
Yeah, that sounds like one you're really going to need to take specifically to a tax preparer. Sit down with them and go through all the numbers because it's probably a little too complicated for us to get into on the air today. But no question, your son can deduct the property taxes. That's a pretty easy one. We've had a couple of those kinds of questions already. So good luck with that, Shirley. I appreciate the call today. 800-642-1234. We'll take a shot at answering your tax questions here on this special tax edition of On Your Money. Shanna Bickle is with me, certified public accountant, who is specializing in tax return preparation, tax planning, retirement planning, and accounting and personal finance. Again, 800-642-1234. Tina in Eagle River, you'll be next. Tina, hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my question is, I'm a personal representative for two family estates, one in Indiana and one in Wisconsin. As the personal rep, I get a paid for doing that, and I'm wondering what receipts I should have for doing taxes on that money.
So did you get a 1099 for being the personal representative?
No, I did not.
Did you make over $600 doing it?
Yes.
Okay. I guess then what I would have you do is, do you have a list of the income that you made and any sort of expenses that you incurred in taking on that role?
I have the amount of money, and the one estate has gone on 7 years, and it's closing out in May. And so I've got, you know, receipts for tax, gasoline and mailings and printer ink and paper and everything going back 7 years for that one. And then I have receipts for the other one that's only gone on 4 years.
Okay, well, did you receive the income all in 1 year, or has it been dispersed through the amount of time that you've been dealing with it?
No, it was dispersed. Part of it was dispersed in 1 year, and part of it was dispersed in 2013.
Okay. And so what I would do is, it's really not self-employment income. It's other income received. And then I would also make sure that you subtract any expenses from that, and so that you're netting out the amount that you actually received, the bottom line.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, and God bless you guys for doing this show.
Tina, thanks so much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Rich in St. Francis next. Rich, hello.
Hey, good morning. I've got a question on a self-directed traditional IRA. I would like to take a distribution this year in 2014. I'm over 59 and a half, so there's no trouble with a penalty. But I'm taking a one-time, I think they call it a non-periodic distribution. The thing I'm concerned about is the tax withholding. What I'm reading is I have to take, they take a 20% withholding for federal.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the state takes their cut somehow. So is there a way I can minimize that? Because my actual tax rate is only like, it's under 15%. So I'd have a huge withholding that I don't need. Is there a way I can get that down to 15% or less?
Well, here's the thing. Is that additional income that you're going to be taking out as a distribution, is that going to bump you up into the next tax bracket?
No, it won't. I'm planning that around that.
Okay, okay. You may want to contact, you know, the custodian. They typically do withhold 20 to 25% automatically, and see, you know, can you reduce that amount?
So it's not a federal requirement. It would be a custodian-based requirement?
That I am not 100%
okay, yeah, because my true tax rate is like 12%. So if they take 20%, I'm overpaying the withholding.
Right.
What I did last year is I took the money out in November, and I ended up with a huge refund, and I really didn't want to have that happen. I'd like to have the cash in my pocket instead.
Right. I understand. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sounds like you need to take this up with the custodian of the IRA and see what rules they're operating under. They may be able to do something for you, and it's also possible that it may just be a rule that you can't get around. So good luck. Rich, thanks so much for the call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got more callers and other interesting things to talk about as we go through our special tax edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley off this week. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine with Shanna Bickle, certified public accountant and income tax preparer. She also specializes in tax planning, retirement planning, accounting, and personal finance. We'll take a short break and be right back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Tax is gonna break my back, I swear. Don't you know I pay a lot more than my share? I hate taxes.
Taxes, it's what's on our mind this hour in a special tax edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley off this week. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Shanna Bickle is with me. And Shanna, a lot of people are doing their own taxes thanks to online tax preparation software and a tax software that we can just buy and install on our computers. When should we seek professional help versus trying the do-it-yourself route?
Oh, what a great, great question. I've had this come across very many times. And I would say this, if you understand what your tax return is supposed to look like, where the numbers are supposed to end up, and you have a pretty good understanding of the instructions and what you're doing, absolutely go ahead and utilize tax software. That's what it's out there for. If you don't, if you have no idea, it can be dangerous to utilize one of those programs because oftentimes they ask questions. And if you misunderstand the question being asked and asked and answer it in such a fashion, it can misrepresent a lot of different things on your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely say that if you have a small business, that you should definitely utilize a tax preparer, because I see many, many mistakes that have to be amended and fixed. And then with the penalties and interest that are often resulting from those mistakes, the person obviously through the headaches and whatnot would have wished that they would have just sought out professional tax advice.
Well, what would be an example of one of the common mistakes that people make that get them in trouble?
Here's one that I've seen many times is the education credits. And, you know, people thinking, oh, I took a class here or whatever, and they didn't receive the appropriate paperwork, and they put down, you know, a heck of a lot of money in tuition that they paid or whatever. And then, you know, they took these big tax credits on their tax return, and it was misrepresented. Either the wrong tax credit was taken, or it really wasn't eligible because it wasn't an eligible institution. You weren't degree-seeking.
Sure.
And so on and so forth.
People still making math mistakes? I would think that with the software that most people use, if they do their own taxes, that that kind of thing would sort of be in the rearview mirror, because the computer is doing all the adding and subtracting and multiplying and dividing. If you put the right numbers in, you should get the right numbers back out.
Right. And that's what the tax software, you know, that's what they stand by. They will not miscalculate. But they can't guarantee that they are going to put, you know, that there isn't going to be a misunderstanding via what they're asking and what your responses are.
Well, it's that old computer dictum: garbage in, garbage out. You have to have the right info at the very start. Let's go back to the phones. Take a call from Shirley in La Crosse. Shirley, thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Last year, I went to one of those help agencies to get my taxes done. I'm a senior. And this year when I went back, she said, oh, someone made a mistake on your taxes last year, and I had to pay in this year. So then I went to H&R Block, and they corrected it. And my question is, kind of a follow-up what you were just speaking, am I going to have to pay a penalty and or interest on the amount I owed from last year?
You'll probably get a letter from the IRS if you do, and they will probably say, you know, this is what you owe. And at that point, you can contact them and explain your situation, and many times you can, you know, get that waived.
Okay, but if there is a penalty, is there a certain amount that it's from that I would have to pay?
It would be based on the amount that you owed after the correction, wouldn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it was $3,000.
Right. So they're going to most likely send you a letter. And just because you get the letter doesn't mean go first thing jump and pay it, okay? Either contact them yourself, and there's a taxpayer advocate helpline that you can seek out.
Okay.
And explain the situation and see if you can't get it reduced and or waived.
Okay, but I already paid what I owe. You know,
correct.
What H&R Block said I owed from last year, I already paid that. So that's
right.
Okay, right?
Right, right.
Okay, all right.
But you may still get a letter saying, you know, that you owed interest on this amount for this period of time.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. That brings up another question that comes up every now and then. So if when you did your taxes last year, you ended up paying in, you didn't get a refund, can you deduct the amount that you paid in from your taxes this year?
No. No. That would have been, you know, that's just your tax income bill. Those aren't state taxes paid. Those are federal taxes paid, and federal taxes are not deductible.
Okay. All right. We hear a lot about people getting those awful letters from the IRS saying, guess what, we're going to audit you. I guess that would strike fear into most hearts. What should we know about audits, and do they have to be scary?
They do not have to be scary. If you are scared, I would seek out somebody to help you. I would also contact that taxpayer advocate helpline. They're not meant to be scary, although I know they put the fear of God into a lot of people. They're just asking for more evidence. Or, you know, they don't understand something, so they just need more documentation, more explanation.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take some more calls. Helen in Milwaukee, you'll be next. Helen, hello.
Hi there, how are you?
Great, go ahead.
Okay. We started a business last year in 2013, and we incurred some expenses. And we were wondering if we could hold off declaring those expenses or filling out a Form C for a profit and loss from business until 2014 because we will be having more expenses this year. And even though we did incur some, it's minimal compared to what we were going to have this year.
So did you recognize any income in 2013 from the business?
None whatsoever.
So these can literally be considered startup costs and can sort of be utilized when you go to start up the business. You'll have a pool of startup costs that then can be amortized.
So in other words, it could be spread out over a few years.
Correct.
Okay. That's what we wanted to know. So we don't have to fill out the form to see the profit or loss from business this year. Then we can just hold off until...
Right. Just keep good documentation of everything that, you know, you're putting out to start the business. And then when you actually, start collecting income and whatever, then go ahead and bring all those to your accountant, your tax preparer, whoever, and say, this is all that we incurred to get this thing going. And we had some that were paid in 2013 and these in 2014. And how can we get these amortized as startup costs?
Okay. One other question. I saw a TurboTax that said it was good for five filings. Does that mean five in the same year, or is it 5 years?
Five in the same year.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're
Helen,
welcome.
Helen, thanks, and good luck with that business. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Mark in Menasha has reached out. Mark, hello.
Hi, good morning. I had a question about rental property and taxes. I have two properties. One is our main home. The other one is a property that we rent out. And so we've gone through, and obviously we have our deductions. And there's the section of our tax program where it talks about the expenses. We obviously have a real estate taxes that are included in there. But then when I get the mortgage interest paid in the 1098s, because I have two 1098s. Am I able to actually claim both of those, both interest off the 1098s, or is it because it's rental, is it one or the other that you claim the loss or you get the interest credit?
Well, the rental mortgage interest has to go on the rental schedule, which is the Schedule E. So
okay.
You want to make sure that it's showing on there.
Okay.
Okay.
And then, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Mark, thanks so much. If you call right away, we might still get you on before the top of the hour, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Shanna, every now and then, maybe even more often than every now and then, however often that is, we see a television spot or hear a radio spot for some service that will help get the IRS off your back if you owe a lot of money. Are these services on the level, or should we avoid them?
I would do a lot of research before jumping on many of those.
Okay, kind of like the ones that say they can reduce your credit card debt to zero?
I would do more research.
Got it. P.T. Barnum was an optimist. Jack in Racine, let's go to you next. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Go ahead.
I started a nonprofit in 2012, and paperwork isn't done yet. But I'm wondering if there are any way that I can claim any of the startup costs or the money that I'm giving to donate or to keep the business going at this first year or two. How do I claim that?
That's going to probably look like a loan to the nonprofit organization. So when that paperwork gets filed and you do have official status as a not-for-profit, then you can show that amount as a loan from yourself.
Okay. All right.
And then
you.
The not-for-profit will be able to pay you back the loan.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank
good you. Luck, Jack. Let's see. Kathy in Green Bay. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to expand a little bit for the gentleman who was looking for withholding on his IRA distributions. The mandatory withholding is only if you take it out of an employer-sponsored plan such as a 401k. Once you've rolled it over into an IRA, there are no mandatory withholding requirements.
Excellent.
All right, Kathy, thanks for chiming in with that. That's great advice for the person who called in earlier. Appreciate it. What are some other things that you really want to mention to people as they're looking at their taxes that they really need to be paying attention to that we haven't covered yet this hour?
I guess if you paid any child care expenses, you really want to make sure that you're utilizing the dependent and child care credit. So that's the Form 2441 that needs to be filled out.
Mm-hmm. And if, of course, if we were paying for those child care expenses out of some sort of program where we set money aside for that purpose that's then removed from our taxable income, we can't double dip.
Right. If that's already shown on your W-2, correct, you cannot take it twice.
Okay. What if we see we owe money to the Treasury, what are some things that you would recommend that we do to lessen the amount next year or maybe even get a refund? And let's say that, you know, it's someone who doesn't own real estate and can't claim any of those kinds of deductions.
You know, if you have a small business where you're earning self-employment income, certainly you want to look at if there's expenses that you can incur in 1 year to offset the amount of income recognized in that year. So if at the end of the year you have, you know, a big surplus and you were thinking about investing in, you know, this expense or this, you may want to go ahead and do that before the tax year. And then, of course, there's always the sales of stocks and mutual funds and, you know, taking losses so that you can recognize those losses on your tax return as well.
Let's try to get in a quick call here from Art in Milwaukee, and we're in the last minute of the program, Art.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you're aware of any publicly accessible database for figuring out historic prices and distributions. This is for figuring out cost basis for a mutual fund that was held for many years, and the vendor and the broker seem to be unable to really produce much in terms of historic cost basis.
Oh, wow. So you don't have any record of the transactions when they took place?
I have rooms, and I mean, we're talking about going back 25, 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. My best guess is just to start Googling and, you know, see if Morningstar or anybody can come up with a cost basis for a particular mutual fund in that time zone. You know, even if you can hit the right year.
Okay. Art, good luck with that. Sounds like a sticky one. So if we have tax questions between now and April 15th, where's the best place to get help?
Are you talking on the internet?
For the average taxpayer. For the average taxpayer, and they're probably going to be looking on the internet or where else. Where would you recommend that people go if they've got questions about their taxes between now and the 15th?
Yeah, I know a lot of, you know, ARP, if you belong to ARP, that they have services available. I know in Florida we have taxpayer services available at our public libraries. Certainly Google, IRS.gov, a lot of questions could be answered just by Googling IRS.gov and throwing in your question there. At least that will give you a start in the right direction.
Okay.
And if you still don't understand, then you may need to just seek out a little extra help. From
hire somebody. Got
yeah.
it. Shanna,
yep.
thanks so much for
Thank
joining
you.
Us on this special edition of On Your Money. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Shanna Bickel was my guest. This program was produced by Bill Martins. Christy Taylor handled on-air production. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.